You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council and also by New Futures.
This is New Hampshire Now on Guide 1450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Reinfish. Joining us for the program this hour of New Hampshire Now is presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the show is presented by the Barley House. The road to the White House begins at the Barley House, home of America's best burger, and WKXL's Pints and Politics series, which is presented by New England College. It's time now for our weekly conversation with Mike Dennehy, one of the top campaign operatives in the state of New Hampshire, and he joins us right now on the program. Mike, how are you?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the show.
And pleasure.
So I want to talk about a couple things in regards to the race right now. We'll get into Biden here in a second, but one of the things that's interesting is that individuals who are running for president have been seeking endorsements for a long period of time, seeking high-profile endorsements. They've been sending the letters. They've been making the calls. They've been doing the fundraising. But to this point, I believe only Senator Morgan has endorsed. He endorsed Cory Booker yesterday. And there have not been really any high-profile endorsements. In fact, Gene Shaheen and Maggie Hassan have both said they're not going to be endorsing in this race. So let's talk about first the meaning of endorsements and their significance, and also why you think individuals are holding out and not endorsing despite perhaps feelings about who they'd like to endorse.
Yeah. Well, first, I actually believe that Shaheen and Hassan probably will endorse someone at a much later stage. I can't believe they will actually just totally stay out of it. But the endorsements, it's so interesting, Chris. I'm surprised that more candidates aren't receiving endorsements, more people
just
aren't
endorsing. Just one thing on that before we
move on. Yeah, please, sure.
I think the challenge for them is very similar to that of the other individuals in that there are so many senators who are running.
Absolutely.
It's not good taste at this point. And both, again, they've both said they're not going to. But but there are so many senators running right now. They may like Kirsten Gillibrand more than Amy Klobuchar, but what if Gillibrand doesn't go anywhere, and then they've just made enemies with Klobuchar, Booker, Warren, Bennett, and
what I expect to happen is to have one or both of them endorse a candidate somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 4 weeks before the New Hampshire primary, maybe even the week before the primary, for someone who's catching fire, and then they could be the kingmaker.
So Ayotte did not do this the last time. There was some expectation that perhaps she would and would, step up for a Marco Rubio or someone of that of that nature and provide them an opportunity, to go toe to toe with Trump, give them a leg up here in the Hampshire primary. But she did not do that. But we'll see if she.
Yeah, no doubt. It's just hard. Shaheen, I could see her staying out of it. Senator
because
Hassan,
of the 2020 race,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah, because of her race for Senate. But Hassan, it's hard to stay out when you're courted every day, and when you truly can make a difference in a close race.
The other thing too is that I don't feel they believe in Bernie, and I don't feel that they
totally.
Yeah,
agree.
So if they feel that they can have an impact and stop Bernie Sanders from running away from the New Hampshire primary,
definitely.
I think that they see the effects that have taken place, and I think there also will be pressure on them to do something if they feel like the Democratic Party is being taken over by progressives and socialists the way that the Republican Party has been taken by Trump supporters and Tea Party folks.
Yeah, and you and I both know that next January there's only going to be 4 or 5 candidates of substance who are double digits in the polls. So, so trying to figure out why New Hampshire's Democratic activists and elected officials aren't endorsing candidates yet. It's a little surprising, especially for people like Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, who've been in the race the longest.
Right.
But I guess when you sit back and think about it, there's still a candidate a week getting into the race.
Right.
So I can understand them sitting back. However, again, you and I both know, Chris, we've been in this long enough. The earlier you get in, the more impact you have. The more influence you have in a campaign.
My good friend Paul Hodes is a great example of this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
First to endorse Barack Obama. He was first elected official to endorse Barack Obama, was not doing well in the polls, and became a lifelong friend of the president as a result of that.
That's right. And obviously, the closer you become to a candidate, if they do win, then the better chance you have of getting a plum position in the administration.
Right. And so there's – and that's the dance that takes place as well. Because, like, so you – let's say I am – you know, let's say I'm a county commissioner or something, or a state rep, and I can endorse Joe Biden and be, like, 10th – well, 50th on the list of people going to endorse Joe Biden in New Hampshire – or I can endorse Pete Buttigieg or Beto O'Rourke and be like fourth or fifth, and like and have actual access to the candidate and you know engage with them in one-on-one settings. So I think that that's all part of the dance, and I think the people also really enjoy being courted.
Yeah,
why I think people are like Biden hasn't gotten in yet, and you know it feels like the race is kind of. Well underway, even though it's only April, but the race still has a long way to go. And I think, you know, as you well know, campaigns handle endorsements in different ways too. Mm-hmm. Maybe people already said they're going to support, but they don't want to roll that out
yet.
As of yet.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, and waste an endorsement or wait till the right time to announce it. The other thing too, I think, to consider for. I expect Democratic activists and officials are considering is if they don't like Bernie or Biden, then who do they go with that still represents the future? Even if they don't win, they have a strong future in politics, mm-hmm. and it's not a wasted endorsement, mm-hmm. which is why I think it was smart of Jim Demers to jump on with Cory Booker mm-hmm. early. Cory Booker is he's part of the future of the mm-hmm. Democratic Party. You know, win or lose. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have influence on the party
for the
next 30, 40 years. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I agree. And how about the weight of endorsements in this particular time period where, you know, you could make the argument that the individual, you know, the mom that's not involved with politics but has 2,000 Facebook followers is probably more significant than the elected official.
Definitely.
So I think that we've kind of moved. I mean, still there's a focus within the you know political media infrastructure. My good friends, you know, Paul Steinhauser and John DeStazo follow these things very closely. To me, like I think that the big names are obviously the ones that matter. But you know the other elected officials. I don't know how much that moves things.
That's always been the
like Chris Pappas. That's a big deal. Like you get
definitely.
Chris Pappas because Chris Pappas knows how to run a race in the state. He can provide you resources, messaging, and information that's important and significant. But you know, the state senator from district whatever. I mean, is that?
Well, it's always been that's always been kind of the double-edged sword, Chris. You spend a lot as a campaign. We spend a lot of time going after endorsements. Mm-hmm. How much does it really matter? In my opinion, the only thing that matters is that it gives your campaign some legitimacy mm-hmm. with the media. Mm-hmm. But that's basically the extent of it.
Right.
Unless you get, you know, you get some elected officials who are good surrogates and mm-hmm. can, you know, go around the state on your behalf, which is important. Mm-hmm. But getting back to how you first started. It's the moms and dads and activists who have lots of followers engaged in their community.
Right.
Those are the people you want involved in your campaign.
Right. And that's how things have changed dramatically is that low information voters learn about the race and learn about the primary via the individuals they follow on social media.
Absolutely.
More so than anything else.
Yep.
So the legitimacy that comes from, you know, your aunt or neighbor being in a picture with Kirsten Gillibrand is huge.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And the campaigns started to realize that in the past cycle, but are hyper-focused on this cycle. Like Cory Booker and Pete Buttigieg this past weekend dedicated, you know, their time and made it very clear they wanted to take selfies with everybody and pictures with everybody.
Yep.
Buttigieg did not take questions at the event in Concord, which I thought was a mistake. And you know, dedicated his time to one-on-one interaction with voters. Why? Because that one voter is actually, you know, 200 or 300 other individuals when they put that picture up on Instagram or social media.
Yeah.
And that legitimacy that is lent where, you know, you're seeing a person for the first time posing with your friend.
Yep.
And like, well, who is that person? And that that is what, that in my view, is dominates campaign politics now, is that one-on-one interaction that is not really high risk. You know, taking questions, things can happen. But when you're one-on-one with a person, taking a picture, that's the best possible scenario. So campaigns are focused very much on allowing time for that to take place, because that that is, in a lot of ways, the new earned media.
It is. And that's how they're going to connect with people. That's how they're going to ultimately rise in the polls. It's not going to be because they got an endorsement or a few endorsements from legislators who were announced, and then it could even be announced in the Washington Post, but it's not ultimately going to lead to voter support, which is why, like you said, that stuff is so important. But it's still, if you want to get noticed by the national media, and even, like you said, even some of the local media, you do have to have some of those endorsements. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say you have to. It makes it easier for you to get noticed by the national
media. Yeah, let's look at Pete Buttigieg's rise as an example, where you know, the national media is it's twofold at this point. I think that the national media is looking for signs of an individual who is on the rise, and where there's something going on there.
Yes.
And I think a lot of Buttigieg's success came off of the CNN town hall meeting, and even prior to that. And that, in my view, was as a result of the grassroots via you know, social media talking about him and the crowds gathering. And so that, to me, it was a very grassroots operation. So legitimacy, in my view, also now comes from social media as well. But you're right. I mean, it makes sense to get endorsements, because when you get endorsements, you know, you are able to gain a legitimacy. And that is still true. But the allocation of time now, in my view, has shifted to, you know, the private meetings and trying to court that state senator. How much time do you spend on that versus doing, you know, the drop-ins and retail politics and events where you meet people and take pictures? I think that you don't extend the resources that you did in the past to court endorsements and to indulge the singular individual.
You know what's funny, Chris? 20 years ago, when I was doing this for John McCain, exactly 20 years ago, in 1999, I started this with John McCain. And he was 10th in the list of candidates running for president, truly. And same situation. We spent probably 2 to 3 months looking for endorsements, and we couldn't get any because George Bush had them, Elizabeth Dole had them, Pat Buchanan had them, Dan Quayle had them. All of these other candidates had the endorsements, so we stopped. And then we just started focusing on more small gatherings, and then we got into town hall meetings, and we started trying to connect with veterans and people on the ground, and that was it.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we did get a few endorsements from some veteran legislators who were veterans, and that did give us some legitimacy, but ultimately, the press didn't pay attention to us until we started to rise in the polls.
Right. And that was as a result of the grassroots
efforts. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you are Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, I think you look at things differently, and that you want to lock up as many endorsements as possible and spend that time because you kind of need to do that because if others started to get endorsements. But if you're, you know, Pete Buttigieg or Beto O'Rourke, you know, you have a luncheon with 20 people as opposed to having a luncheon with separate luncheons with one or two people.
Yep.
And you work to get the endorsements, but you're not solely focused on
that. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right.
We've gone well into the minutiae of campaign politics here on the program.
Everything you wanted to know about endorsements.
With Mike Denny here on the New Hampshire Now program. This hour of the show is presented by ARP New Hampshire as well as the Concord Food Co-op. And this segment of the show is brought to you by the Barley House. We're inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio. So as we referenced earlier, it is very early in this process. But I look at two incredibly gifted politicians in Cory Booker and Kirsten Gillibrand.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them are struggling in the polls right now. And you kind of wonder why.
Yeah.
When let's look at Booker specifically. Okay. What are your feelings about why, you know, he is not in the higher echelon of the Democratic candidates at this point, given how gifted a public speaker he is? He's, as I said before, he may be the best I've ever seen And so why do you think he's struggling?
I have a couple of assumptions. One, he has nothing that specifically separates him from anyone else. He is energetic and is a phenomenal speaker. From an issue perspective or a policy perspective, there's nothing that I see that separates him from the pack. So he does he is gifted, and that does separate him to a point. However, the other assumption I've made is that Beto O'Rourke has kind of neutered him a bit, because Beto O'Rourke was more of a national personality, almost taking out Ted Cruz, and he had this national fundraising and network. Everyone knew who he was. And I think the energy around O'Rourke just kind of halted Booker's campaign, kind of just stalled it. I don't believe it's a permanent stall, and I think Booker can do several things to get himself back in a good spot, and it's going to include spending a lot of time in New Hampshire, which I'm sure Jim Demers will make sure he does. I think Beto O'Rourke is the main reason that Booker has stalled.
How about Gillibrand? And really the female candidates mm-hmm. as a whole, it's been documented, and I think it's a fair statement that the female candidates have not received the attention that they deserve as compared to Beto O'Rourke and Pete Buttigieg others.
Yep.
Booker, I don't think, has received as much attention as them either, and is kind of with the female candidates, but it's clear, obviously, that the female candidates have not received that attention. Kirsten Gillibrand is a really good story. I mean, she's a working mom, mm-hmm. and she has, that persona of the life-work balance. She's a good public speaker. She's really good one-on-one. She's spent a lot of time here in New Hampshire, too. So why do you think that the female candidates as a whole, and Kirsten Gillibrand in particular, have struggled to resonate?
Very similar, in my opinion. It's a very similar situation to the one with Cory Booker. Gillibrand is third, if not fourth, on the list behind Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar. And I just don't think that there doesn't appear to be any oxygen for Gillibrand, as good as her story may be. When Elizabeth Warren was first to the scene, but she hasn't really gone far. And Kamala Harris, when she announced, I think she has stolen any of the oxygen for a female candidate, and that seems to be where the energy is going for those who want a female president in the Democratic Party. And again, it's early, so things can change, but I think whether it's Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, or Kirsten Gillibrand, they're going to have to figure out how to separate themselves from Kamala Harris, who is just more accomplished.
Yeah, so, and she has a greater resume. She's also, the best public speaker out of the group as well.
That's right.
That's the problem with all of these candidates. There's these individuals in front of them. They have to figure out ways to
get
move around
them. Yeah,
Mike,
yep.
as always, appreciate you joining us for the program.
Yeah, pleasure.
Mike Dennehy here on Hampshire Now, 91450 and nhtalkradio.com. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program is presented by ARP New Hampshire, as well as the Concord Food Co-op, and that segment of the show brought to you by the Barley House. We'll come back with more from inside the Concord Photo Service Main Street studio after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council, and also by New Futures.